Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. My name is John Manuel, joined as usual on a College Monday by our national writer, Aaron Fitt, who is down in St. Petersburg, Florida. We're not joining you from the DeMarini Demo House podcast. Today, we're recording it from my office. But no matter where we record this podcast, we want to remind you that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy. Because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your nearest demo house today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demo house. And Aaron, in the college top 25 this week at baseballamerica.com, very little change at the top of the rankings. Let's touch on those top teams, though, if we could. Virginia remains number one. Another impressive weekend by the Cavaliers, Aaron. Why don't you talk a little bit about LSU, the defending national champions? The Tigers are off to a great start, but they obviously have the Anthony Renato situation going on where they're number one starter, and one of the biggest reasons they won the national title last year, one of the biggest reasons why they're ranked number two. They're without Anthony Renato. How long are they going to be without Anthony Renato, and who can step forward for them and kind of help fill that void?
Well, we don't know yet how long it's going to be. They said it's a stress reaction, I guess, in the arm. And, you know, that could be serious or it might not be. My guess is he'll be at another week or two. But, you know, it's definitely a concern. I mean, there's no question about it. Without Anthony Renato, they're much less impressive, frankly. You get that anchor at the top of your rotation. Everything else falls into place after that. But without that guy, I mean, you know, Austin Ross was okay on Friday, but it's not a marquee Friday starter. And Joey Bourgeois was not as good in his second start as he was in his first start. LSU has some pitching problems. They really need Renato back. This guy, Jordan Rittner, the freshman, did come in on Sunday in the doubleheader, I guess, and pitched pretty well. I mean, six innings. He was pretty good. But, he's no Anthony Renato. So that's a key question right now facing the Tigers.
Yeah, I think it is. I think the SEC, actually, of any league I can think of, has more significant injury or roster questions than anybody else. You got Kentucky obviously losing James Paxton. You got Anthony Renato. You got Jackie Bradley Jr. over at South Carolina. Those are some big time. Those are all three. Paxton, I don't think we put him on the all-conference team in the preseason because we weren't sure of his status. But if all three of those guys were in the clear, that's three first-team all-SEC caliber performers who right now are out of the mix. So.
And of course, Auburn has had some bad injuries, most notably Trent Mummy.
Absolutely.
Tennessee, Cody Hahn was hurt last week to somebody's shoulder. He did come back this week. I think he was DH'd, though, so I don't know if he's 100% yet. But, yeah, the SEC's been hit pretty hard by injuries. There's been a lot of notable injuries early on. Other All-Americans like Ryan Lamar from Michigan got hurt. And I think I'm forgetting somebody else, too. There was definitely there's been a rash of these things.
Yeah, we should have the DeMarini Demo House training room at Baseball America on the podcast. We should have that section. But elsewhere in the top of the rankings, Aaron, very impressive weekend by Texas. Probably as impressive a weekend as anyone had because they did it the way they should do it, which is they pitched extremely well. They gave up five runs to a Stanford team that last weekend was quite impressive in pounding rice. And then they also pitched they hit very well this weekend, and basically, like we had in the scouting report on the weekend preview, that Texas, the scouts told you, don't worry about Texas. They hit the ball pretty well against New Mexico, and they did that against Stanford. So Stanford's young club goes on the road for the first time and gets a little bit of a rude awakening going down to UFCU Dish Falk Field.
Yeah, Texas won those games the way they're going to win most of their games this year. They pitched and they played defense, and I mean they're not going to win a lot of 18-5 games. That's just not how they're built. They're going to win 6-3 and 5-2, and that's what they did this weekend. They held Stanford in check. This team should lead the nation in run prevention. I think that's I think that's a pretty safe bet, frankly.
It's the envy of Theo Epstein, the Texas Longhorns.
There you go. There's a rumor that Theo Epstein was spotted down here at. At the Big East Big Ten Classic this weekend, although I did not see him myself. But,
did you see anyone in a gorilla suit?
I didn't. Well played.
That's an old joke, but a good one.
But Stanford, great opening weekend, but going on the road with a young team against the preseason number one is a much different deal. And, we obviously cut Stanford a little bit. rankings after getting swept this weekend. A strength of that's been strong. First opening weekend, first of all. And just, you know, we respect teams that play good competition early, especially if they do okay against that competition. So 3-3 against Rice and Texas ain't bad.
Yeah, last week also I talked to a scout who saw Stanford in that opening weekend series, and he was, I think if you saw them that weekend, you were going to be impressed. I mean, that's really not saying much. But he really did confirm a lot of what we talked about on last week's podcast about their athletic ability. And this is going to be a good team this year. They're going to have their ups and downs because they are young. You know, most of the talent on this team is freshmen and sophomores. But they have some exciting talent. 2011 might be a big year for the Cardinal. We have three new teams in the top 10 this week, Aaron. Texas Christian coming up to number 7 after winning a series at Cal State Fullerton. Coastal Carolina jumping up to number 8, probably the highest ranking in Chanticleer history. With their weekend, a very strong week for the Chanticleers with 2 victories against UC Irvine. And Louisville jumping up to number 10. Let's which of those three teams had the biggest week for you? Which one do you want to start talking about first?
Boy, it's hard to pick. I mean, I guess TCU going on the road and taking 2 out of 3 at Fullerton for the second straight year, that's not easy, you know. And clearly the Titans are not themselves yet. I don't think they've hit their stride. They will. They're going to be better. They're going to be, you know, I still believe they're an Omaha team at the end of the year when it's all said and done. But right now, they're scuffling to score some runs. They really didn't hit this weekend. And part of that is a testament to TCU's pitching staff. You know, we knew the Horned Frogs were going to have an elite pitching staff, and that's what they've got. You know, even with Matt Perk not yet settling in, he did pitch very well in the middle game of that series. But even without him, they've just got so many arms, John, and especially in the bullpen. They were able to shut down Fullerton in the bullpen all weekend, and that's why we like this team so much coming in the year, is the pitching depth, all those options that they have. And you know, they've been hitting pretty well. They've gotten good contributions from their freshmen. Jake Elander continues to hit pretty well. And Jason Coates, the sophomore, had a really big weekend. So I think they really were hoping for Coates and Taylor Featherston to step in and fill the shoes of some of their departed guys in the middle of the lineup. And so far, so good.
Yeah, that's really the thing with TCU, is it's not a team. I mean, I guess the most recognizable player, the big star on the team, kind of is Matt Perk. And the thing is, outside of him, though, picking a second-best player on that team, that's almost a fool's errand. I mean, they've got like 10 second-best players on that team. And that's what makes TCU, you know, a top 10 team. It really isn't a big talent drop-off anywhere else on the team. Or the rest of that team, they have athletes. They have guys up the middle. They're just, you know, there's some middle-of-the-lineup muscle. They've got guys who used to be Friday starters who are now in the bullpen, they really do have a lot of different options. Whereas Coastal Carolina, it sounds like it's a pretty deep team too, but Aaron, they've got stars, and so far, so good with their stars performing. I think the biggest news for me out of Coastal is that, well, Anthony Mayo hasn't pitched great so far this year. Boy, Cody Wheeler go head-to-head with Daniel Bibona and to win that game. I mean, there are not that many pitchers who can do that, go head-to-head with another team's All-America type guy, and they did that. They threw out their own guy in Cody Wheeler, and that's one of the things that makes Coastal Carolina so difficult.
Yeah, you're right. The star power is a big factor for Coastal Carolina with Cody Wheeler. Scott Woodward bounced back this weekend a little bit after a rough weekend last week. But also, I mean, you know, you talk about pitching depth. You know, Coastal has got a guy that people forget about, Jim Birmingham, this junior left-hander. He picked up 2 wins this weekend, beat NC State and Wake Forest. This week, I should say, not this weekend. This guy was a transfer from an Ivy League school, I want to say Penn, a couple of years ago, and they went to regionals. And he had a real good freshman year there. And you know, this is the guy you can really locate. That's a nice piece to have, an often overlooked piece for Coastal. So, you know, I like their team a lot. You know, I've been saying it, obviously. I mean, ranked 12 in the preseason, it's a great weekend.
It is a big weekend. So there was decent crowds down there as well, according to our own Jim Schoenard. And although we did not rank that team this weekend, NC State had a big weekend. They got the loss against Coastal in the finale, but NC State beats James Madison and beats UC Irvine. And Russell Wilson's a really interesting story to watch there. He's NC State's quarterback, and he was an all-ACC performer, I think, the last 2 seasons. And this weekend he had a walk-off home run on Friday, and then he saved the game out of the bullpen on Saturday. He's pitching this year, which is, I did not know he was a pitcher at all. And NC State's got some pitching injuries, so that's a good weekend. NC State, I don't think we think of their top 25 team yet. It's really hard to judge their first weekend. They annihilated LaSalle. They scored 17 runs in the first two innings of the season. But NC State's a good sleeper team to watch. From the middle of that ACC pack, we talked about how they're like, the ACC has a chance to get 7 regional teams this year, maybe an outside shot at 8 for the first time ever. And NC State's generally thought of as the back of that conversation, but it is a team to watch. That's a club that went to Super Regionals 2 years ago, and they do have some interesting pieces. Jake Buchanan on Fridays, a good veteran starter, was very good in the Cape last year, so that's an interesting team to watch. Meanwhile, Irvine Aaron really struggled at the baseball at the beach. They did score runs, which I think, again, that's kind of the underrated part of Irvine's season. Let's talk about those Big West teams, Irvine and Fullerton. What's the deal with the Titans? I watched a video that the Titans produced with Dave Serrano talking, and it sounds like they're just not executing right now to the level that they need or that they expect of themselves or that everyone else has come to expect of the Titans.
You know, the thing about Fullerton is the thing that's different about Fullerton as compared with Irvine is they've got a lot of new faces that they're trying to break in the lineup. I mean, remember, they had a bunch of seniors on that team last year. I think they lost 6 starters from last year's Omaha team. So for them, I think it's a matter of finding the right combination of guys. They've got some freshmen that they're playing. I mean, we've seen Matt Orloff at second base. We've seen Austin Kingsolver in the outfield, kind of a new face.
Great name, Austin Kingsolver.
It is a great name. So we've seen a lot of different lineups early. I think Dave Serrano's still trying to figure out what he's got, whereas Irvine knows what it's got. I mean, it's a very experienced veteran lineup, and they're going to play defense, and they're going to hit okay, and they're going to pitch too. I mean, this weekend, they just didn't have it. You know, it was a bad weekend. I guess you could have one of those once every 20 weeks or so if you're Irvine.
But, right.
You go across the country and you play good competition. You're not always going to win the weekend. I think that's what it comes down to. Not worried about Irvine at all.
That's a good way to put it. Even more vexing is that Fullerton losing two weekends, both of them at home. Not a great sign initially. For the Titans, but I think we all expect them to get their act together. But we did drop them in the poll pretty significantly this week. They went down 10 spots, and that's a little cumulative effect of losing two weekends again at home. Meanwhile, East Carolina, a team that's already had probably the most volatile team in our rankings so far this year, Aaron, is the Pirates. And they've played back-to-back top 10 teams at home. They played Virginia at home, the number one team, lost that series, and they play South Carolina at home. They won that series this weekend. They pitched very well. The Pirates are 14, South Carolina 15 this weekend. I don't think we really learned a whole lot new this weekend, though, did we, out of either East Carolina or South Carolina? Those are both really good teams that are teams I think we both expect to get to Super Regionals, and that they're going to have to probably get a break or two to get to Omaha and win a Super Regional. And you learn anything about either of those Cackalack teams this weekend?
Not really. I mean, I think those teams were pretty evenly matched. And remember, the preseason, East Carolina was 18 and South Carolina was 10. I didn't think there was a lot of separation between any of the teams in that part of the rankings.
Right.
Frankly. So, I mean, if you're playing a home series, you'd expect the home team to win 2 out of 3, generally, as kind of the default position there. And South Carolina almost won the middle game. I mean, they had the lead in the 9th inning. So, that's about as even as the series can get right there. And that's even without South Carolina having its best player, Jackie Bradley Jr. So, I do think South Carolina is the better team overall, but it's very close. And East Carolina won the head-to-head. And again, we give the Pirates credit for scheduling good competition early. They did hold their own against Virginia last week, the number one team in the country. So, it seems a little volatile to move them back up 8 spots. But I think that most of us felt that, moving them down 4 spots last week was a little more than we even wanted to do. It just was the way the poll worked out last week. But I'm comfortable with them at 14. I think those two teams, all the teams in this range, John, are pretty similar.
I think so. Not a lot of separation between really, to me, 14 or even 13 and 12 and, say, 28 or 30. There's a lot of – it's very early and not a whole lot of dramatic things going on. We did bring Kentucky and Georgia into the poll at the back. We dropped San Diego, which lost a series to San Diego State, a little bit of a surprise. And then who else did we drop, Aaron? Southern Miss, that's right, which lost a home series to Lemoyne, which I think people who are longtime listeners – or followers of our college baseball coverage realize the respect we have for Lemoyne. That's a good program. For a program up in Syracuse, New York, they really get after it. They grind. A pretty impressive weekend series for them.
I'll tell you, the most impressive thing about that is they beat Todd McGinnis on Friday, best pitcher in Conference USA, and he was good, too. He struck out 10, I think, but Jeff Chardick was better for Lemoyne.
Yeah, and that's just impressive for that program and for the Dolphins, so kudos to them. Aaron, to wrap up the podcast, let's talk about the event that you saw in person, the Big East Big Ten Challenge. We have one Big East team ranked in Louisville. We do not have a Big Ten team ranked yet, although I think Ohio State certainly is a top 25 caliber club. Minnesota was not that good this weekend. It doesn't seem like from the Big Ten. We'll kick it off with Louisville. Do they live up to their billing this weekend, or do they even play a little bit better than they were advertised?
Yeah, I think if anything, they were even better than advertised. I thought they were impressive in all phases of the game. The thing that really jumped out to me, first of all, was how good Thomas Royce was on Friday. I mean, that was the big question with his team, is who was going to be the Friday guy, and I think they've got that answer. I mean, he was really, John, exceptional. I mean, he's a great fastball command, so I know you're going to like him.
He's that kind of guy. I saw the tweet.
Yeah, and it's a good tight slider, you know. And the other big development, I think, was Neil Holland. I mean, that guy was dynamite twice this weekend, really just unhittable. They've got a flexible, pretty deep bullpen there with Holland and Bob Revesz, Gabriel Shaw. I mean, those are three real good options back there. Let them keep Tony Zick in the rotation. They're in good shape.
Yeah, and you got to like the track record of Roger Williams. He's turned a lot of guys to be sidearm guys. When he was at North Carolina, they did it for a long time. Right. There's quite a long history of them, and of course, Derek DePriest is a longtime personal fave. Guy who had 15 saves one year for them and almost pitched them to Omaha single-handedly, basically, in 1998 at Miami in a regional down there. So, and that Louisville team also, Aaron, I think the thing is the identity of that team for a lot of people, because that the 2007 team that got to Omaha was so offensive. It seems like pitching and athleticism are really the hallmarks of this team, as opposed to, doesn't mean they can't mash, but they're a pretty athletic team, it sounds like.
I still think that they're, more than anything, they're a big physical mashing team. I still think that's their identity. I mean, you know, with the Phil Wunderlichs and the Stuart Iams and, you know, those kind of guys, Andrew Clark, those are just big mashers. I mean, Wunderlich's more athletic than he looks, and really all those guys are. Brian Wright is an exceptional athlete, and Josh Richmond, Adam Duvall, and Drew Haynes, those guys are really good athletes. They're just a good, balanced team, and I tell you, it's February, I guess it's March now, but they sure look like an Omaha team at this early stage.
I'll give you a couple other highlights that stood out in the Twitter feed to me, and you can follow us at twitter.com/baseballamerica. We're over 9,000 followers, really, we really made like two pushes at this, basically, college baseball season, and then last year at the signing deadline. This is the only two times we've really pushed Twitter, but it's a great way to follow, and especially when Aaron's in person. And of course, next weekend you'll be at the Houston College Classic, the Astros College Classic. But Aaron, Notre Dame sounded like they were pretty terrible this weekend, even though they pulled out a win on Sunday. Minnesota seems like a talented team, but not quite sharp this weekend. And UConn sounds like just a real sleeper ball club with talent all over the place, whether it's Michael Ault or George Stringer or I don't know his first name. I'm going to call him Pierre LaPage at second base.
That is his name.
It is his name? Awesome. Awesome. But
And Matt Barnes, of course, was probably the best arm I saw all weekend. I saw 13 games this weekend.
I lost the fact that he was on UConn, but there it is. 10 straight fastballs at 94+. Right here on the Twitter feed. So, I mean, has UConn got a chance to be a sleeper this year? Are they good enough? It sounds like they were pretty up and down this weekend.
I mean, they were down in their first game against Northwestern because it was their first time outside this year. They didn't play last weekend. And they dropped some pop-ups, but really it was only just one inning. I mean, they had one little bullpen meltdown. Other than that, they were fine. And then they bounced back and beat Indiana pretty soundly on Saturday and then beat Indiana on Sunday. So I think they're good. And I was talking to some scouts about them, and they think they're good. You know, I think that they're a regional team this year. And it's the thing is, it's going to be tough. The Big East this year, they've they've got four teams, I think, that are they're really going to be battling for two, maybe three regional spots. Louisville's a lock. And then, you know, St. John's was, to me, one of the big stories of this weekend also. They're good. I mean, they're going to be a real factor. And South Florida's going to be there, too. So you've got four teams, you know, and they won't be easy. But I think all four of those teams are very solid.
And it's really unlikely for the Big East to get four bids.
No, that won't happen.
The Big Ten looking like a two bid, three bid. What are you thinking? I know it's early, but I mean,
yeah.
You got Michigan obviously with their best player out. That's not going to help anything. And you got Minnesota not off to a great start. Did those starts for those two teams affect their chances of winning at large? You know, at large berths as opposed to having to win the conference.
You know, I don't think so. Only because in Minnesota, both those cases, they've got pretty good competition left. I mean, Minnesota's got the Dairy Queen Classic next week. They've got Oklahoma State and Loyola Marymount, and they've got a couple of games down at Alabama. You know, so they'll have an opportunity to boost their RPI a little bit. And Michigan's going down to North Carolina this weekend, and I'll tell you what, wouldn't be surprised if Michigan steals that series because they can really pitch. I mean, they really can. I think their arms, in general, will match up just as well as North Carolina's arms.
How do they match up with Maine though? That's the big question because Maine, obviously, your boys. Pulled out the victory as you didn't even pick them to win a game, but the two guys you wrote about went and beat North Carolina, which I think it's even more impressive when you consider the fact that that was the guy's first win of his career and the first career save for the other guy, which was pretty impressive.
Well, I think the people who gave me the heads up on that one, but I'll tell you, you know, I just say that I think that North Carolina is still not scoring a lot of runs. They're going to have a hard time scoring against Michigan's arms next week. And, you know, vice versa, Michigan hasn't scored a lot of runs either. It's going to be a low-scoring series. I wouldn't be surprised to see Michigan steal a game or two.
And, of course, one very good sign for North Carolina was Matt Harvey was apparently outstanding on Friday. Sounds like his velocity was good. Sounds like his location was good. And that's one thing we talked about that North Carolina really needed was for Matt Harvey to come through some this season. And so far he has. Let's sign up the podcast, Aaron. Let's take a quick question off our Facebook page. Really, if you log in pretty much to Facebook every week around 11 o'clock a.m., that's generally when we're going to be recording the podcast, and you can send us questions. And, of course, you can also always email us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Nate Feria asks, what does James Paxton leaving Kentucky mean for him, and what does it mean for the program? I think for him, Aaron, it means that he's going to, you know, I guess he's staying in school, it sounds like, and then he's going to but even if he doesn't stay in school, the point is he's going to go to Indy Ball, like a lot of other people have done, and it's you're basically kind of treating it like a draft holdout used to be treated. He'll go to Fort Worth, or he'll go to St. Paul in the Northern League or the American Association, and he'll pitch and try to pitch his way into the first round of a weak draft class, and you know, it probably hurts his draft stock a little bit because he'll get fewer looks at him, and he's facing, frankly, a little bit better competition than you see in the SEC, but I think people would rather see him every Friday in the SEC than see him in Indy Ball, and he's going to get fewer looks in Indy Ball, so probably doesn't help his draft stock. What does it mean for the Wildcats and for the 2010 team?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I think on the whole, obviously it hurts them, but they do have enough arms that they're going to be competitive. I think they're going to be a regional team. I mean, they've pitched very well the last 2 weeks. That freshman Taylor Rogers, the left-hander from Colorado,
yeah, he's good.
Dynamite on Saturdays, 2 weeks in a row. And, you know, they've got obviously a blue chip ace with Alex Meyer, though he hasn't really hit his stride yet this spring. And Logan Darnell's got a good arm. So, I mean, it's not going to cripple them. Obviously, you'd rather have Paxton, and I know Kentucky's disappointed that he didn't at least meet with the NCAA and try to appeal the thing if he was penalized, but I have a feeling, and I don't know this for sure, but, you know, I have a feeling Paxton believes that Kentucky didn't really support him with this whole situation, and, you know, it's a tough situation. I don't blame Kentucky the way they handled it. You can't put the rest of your team at risk and play a guy who hasn't, you know, who's got to settle, you know, in the eligibility questions. It's really unfortunate. I mean, once again, it's the NCAA victimizing a kid unfairly, in my opinion. This rule is bogus. There's, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other players out there who did the same thing, and they weren't punished, but James Paxton was because of a media report, and that's not fair.
Yeah, there's no other way to put it. I think you nailed it, Aaron. But I mean, the thing is, Kentucky's had a little bit of time to prepare for this. And let's face it, they came into this year not expecting to have James Paxton. You know, last June, the guy was drafted in the first 40 picks. They did not expect to get that guy back. So really, it's almost status quo from before August 17th last year, you know?
Yeah.
So there were a few fleeting weeks there where Kentucky probably thought they'd have James Paxton this year. And I think for most of their planning, they weren't gonna, they didn't expect to have him. So they're going to war with the army they have, not the army they wish they had, to paraphrase Donald Rumsfeld. So let's hope it works out better for Kentucky than it did for Donald Rumsfeld. That's enough politics on the Baseball America College podcast. And that's enough of the Baseball America College podcast. Aaron's got a plane to catch. I've got a podcast to edit. We appreciate the download. We appreciate people listening. And we want to remind you that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. Until next week, for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America College podcast. So long, everybody.